The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
DJ,
No other context to this song other than we just wanted to hear it today and to hear that gecko in the background. But hitting record, right?
That gecko's just singing along with Fred Durst. He knows what's up.
He's just singing along with the method.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. We're coming to you early for the first time in a long time. Especially for NRL round one, which was...
So we're just excited. Rugby league's back.
Oh, and wasn't it back? I mean, if we start with the Thursday game, Storm and Rabbitohs. Storm getting a
scorching start to the season.
Yeah, 26-18 to the Storm, but my God, they started strong. They started real strong. Rabbitohs, they were shell... Like, it wasn't even a shell shot. They just literally had nothing. They could not defend against them.
Just unbelievable, just house of fire, like just unbelievable. The thing that they put up right at this, you know, pretty much right at the start of the Fox Sports broadcast is South have never won in Victoria in 16 attempts.
Yep,
and they're 9-0 at Amy Park. So
and
an uphill battle to start with from the Rabbitohs, and it just didn't start well at all. You know, it all just came unraveled in what was it, the third minute, second minute?
Third minute, I think it was Munster. Second minute, you're right. Munster went over. That the second half sort of plateaued off for Melbourne, but that all four of those first half tries in the first 30 minutes were phenomenal tries. Obviously Pappenhausen's were just blistering speed and that was that. But Munster, yeah. Munster just from that 2 minutes, and that's weird, this is weird to say from 2 minutes, but Munster really took that, okay, Cameron Smith's not here anymore, boys, I'll lead the team. And it probably happened in training, but that's the first 2 minutes, that's what I saw.
This is on me, boys. Not necessarily going out there straight up and just saying, hey, it's my team now. Cam's gone. It's my team. But
wow,
you can't argue with that. Just the way that they opened everything up. The kicking game was amazing. They were just pinning South back on their own line, just having trouble getting out of their own half. And they just, whenever they got into good positions, inside the 20 of Melbourne, and they were very few and far between, especially in the first half, they just couldn't execute. They had 10 errors in the first half.
It was crazy that the
pressure was just so relentless by Melbourne. And the worst, obviously the worst thing that happened was half time.
For Melbourne.
The best thing to happen for South was half time because they came out, sort of full of life and full of gusto in the second half.
Well, it ended up 62-38 in terms of possession, but I'm sure I read it, and it's probably right, but I'm sure I read that the first 40, it was about 80-20. I'm sure, I'm very sure.
It was something along those lines. It was like 73-27, something like that.
The other thing I was going to say just about Melbourne, you know, you said, I guess for Rabbitohs, not having a great record in Melbourne. They haven't lost a first round game in over 17 years. So
exactly.
It's now coming up to 19 years. So yeah, they kept that intact very well. I mean, the second half, the Rabbitohs, I guess, started to find their chops, so to speak. I think I didn't see real much of Cody Walker, but I just felt their halves really sort of, I guess, Adam Reynolds took control of that team a little bit and started to spread the ball, especially out to Alex Johnson, who, God, I may as well put money on it now. That guy's probably going to win top try scorer again. I know you're bored, Felt, but
that's right. Yeah, he got gifted it last year, but you never know that it might come to fruition again. Like the thing that sort of stood out to me, I think a little bit as well, is Gagai at center. With all the new additions that they've got. in the back line. And obviously Josh Mansour has come across there from the Panthers as well. So obviously him and Johnston are going to be the wingers. But I really, really like Gagai at centre. That's where he plays his best. It's where, you know, okay, he chops and changes for Queensland, whether he's at centre or on the wing. But when he was at his best in clubland, when he was at Newcastle and he was playing at centre, and he was an absolute difference maker in a side in the Newcastle Knights, you know, a few years ago now, that were just so grossly undermanned. And he took that team and put it on his shoulders a hell of a lot, throughout those seasons where they won. It was a 3 straight wooden spoons under Brownie. And I like the move to put him at centre. It's where he plays best.
Offensively, we all know he has that. I think he plays better defensively as a centre. I think that's where he shines most as a centre. Defensively, he slides very well. He reads the plays phenomenally well, and you can see that with the Maroons. Right. I think, on the other side with the centre, Remy Smith had a good game, like our new signing. George was on the wing, but Remy Smith seemed to be pretty comfortable there so far in the centre.
I think that the Storm system just makes it easy for new guys like that to just come in and slot in straight away and feel comfortable, within the first couple of games. Like, you know, we've seen it before where they've sort of taken outcasts from other teams and brought them in and turned them into stars. So I don't think this will be any different. I think everybody knew sort of the talent out there with Remus Smith. So any sort of breaking news or anything.
Well,
like that.
Also
George Jennings as well. You know, he's obviously another new signing that's there in the back line. So they seem to just slot in seamlessly. They get them involved early and often, you know, that's just the Craig Bellamy way to sort of get out there and go about things.
I just also think, I'm not going off one round and the other guy's not even back yet, but they can quickly have another big three in Ryan Pappenhausen, Cameron Munster and Harry Grant, which is ridiculous, at the end of the day.
And that's the thing, you know, Brandon Smith obviously sort of filling in in the number 9 jumper for now, until Harry Grant gets back around round 4.
Wow. So, probably for a long time.
See what happens then?
Did you end up reading about that he's willing to, I guess, it happens in the NBA a lot, but he's willing to buy out his contract or pay for the rest of his contract to get a number 9 spot somewhere?
I did see that, but also seen a thing, I don't know if it was like his response to it on Instagram or on Twitter or somewhere, where he's like, you know, that's all flattering and all well and good, but I'd rather spend $200,000 on getting my golf game up to scratch if anyone can help me. So I don't know how. That's so good.
What? Look, the thing is,
his handle is like Hectic_cheese. He's the best.
He's probably going to play, most likely, just on Harry Grant. I mean, depending on what happens with Harry Grant, of course, he probably will be behind him. But he doesn't have many years left. And he's only 24. He's only 24 years old. So he will still command a bigger contract. I think he'll be fine.
If he's got his heart set on the number 9 jersey, but it's you know, bleedingly obvious that they will be going with Harry Grant. So I don't think he has a choice but either to look somewhere else.
I mean, up until that State of Origin series, I think that's when it made it bleedingly obvious. He was okay.
Oh, absolutely.
And that, but that Origin series, they went, he would have looked at that game and he just went, yeah, okay, I'm going to have to start looking elsewhere because...
No, well, that's the thing too. And also, you know, Brandon Smith didn't get to showcase any of his talents at the end of the season either, apart from the grand final, because there was no test series. That's unfortunate for him.
On the other side, you know, this guy's mentioned he wants to be the best number one in the next 3 years. Latrell Mitchell, I think he ended up getting 180 meters in that game, run meters. I think he's one of those players where offensively he had that natural offense. I mean, that's sliding try he sort of did, where he sort of slid along and then sort of zigged back in. You know, his offense is brilliant. I think if he's going to be what he says is like the best number one, and compared to the other guy that's across the road in Pappenhausen, I think defensively, I think Mitchell has lapses, especially in that first half. Like
he's got a lot of competition at the fullback position if he wants to, you know, elevate himself to being the number one. Like there's, you know, crosstown rivals in the Sydney Roosters. We've got somebody by the name of James Tedesco who's pretty handy.
Let's just cancel out all their offense because they're all phenomenal in offense. It's their defense.
It's whether or not, and the big part of a fullback defensively now is organizing your line of defense and having a voice on you.
And position and being in the right position, and that's what he lacked in that first part.
That's right. And a lot of teams do it now, and I'm sure we'll talk about this throughout the season as well. Like a lot of teams will play, and I think it was a ploy that was brought in by Wayne Bennett a few years ago. Oh, actually, no, it was probably more than a few years ago now. It was when Wayne Bennett first went to the Dragons, and he was playing Darius Boyd up in the line of defense to have that 13th man in the line of defense. But you are then prone to defensive lapses with good kicking games and getting it in behind and not having anybody there.
He's got every chance to. He's got some seriously healthy competition.
Oh, absolutely, that's right. He's got a lot of competition. That's I mean, he's got a lot to live up to if he's going to do that.
Next game was the first Friday night game, and that was the Knights getting over the Doggies 32-16 in front of a very healthy crowd. Like, you know, I guess for a round one game, it was just under 20,000, 19,555 to be exact. I think they were 75.
They're allowed 75% capacity in New South Wales. And they pretty much got there, Newcastle, which, you know, it's one team town. That's, you know, they love their Knights there. You know that. You live there. You know the passion that they have. For their Knights. So it's no surprise that they nearly had 20,000 there.
What do you think of our boy Tex Hoy didn't do much, and that's fine. He didn't need to. There's a lot of other players out there.
You know, Tex Hoy did solid at the back. So you can't really fault him for that. The two keys in this game were Daniel Saifidi and David Clemmer.
I literally just said in my head forwards. The forwards. Yes. They both of them. That is we all know how Clemmer is, and Saifidi sort of showed it last year as well, but my God, that is a very, very good team.
Well, Clemmer this year is going to absolutely have a bee in his bonnet for not being selected for New South Wales. So this could be not to say that it's going to be a breakout year, because we all know what David Clemmer can do. You know, he's an Australian prop. He's an Origin prop. But I think he's primed again for just a huge season.
Yeah.
Just impactful as always.
Yeah, I mean, we both agreed on this last year. He should have. There was no reason, not even, you know, to be completely omitted from that New South Wales squad.
Exactly. They had an extended squad and everything. I could not fathom how he couldn't even make the cut for a 20 man or a 21 man squad. That was lunacy.
I thought I personally picked just because I don't know. I mean, this is just me. I just like to pick the sort of one roughie per week. So I did pick the Bulldogs over the Knights. And
Why would you do that? I had to.
Just be purely because I love having that. I mean, there's always one roughie, and obviously it wasn't this game. With their makeup, and the other side of it was that it's a completely new makeup. Yes, they had preseason, but preseason and game time makeup's completely different.
You can do all the preseason training in the world, but if you're not playing actual games against real competition, then it's hard to get that chemistry.
But I thought I didn't think it was really that middle sort of section where Newcastle just lit them up. You know, basically from the 30th to the 40th minute, they scored three unanswered tries and they couldn't come back up until the 75th minute. Bulldogs. I thought they weren't too bad. Except for that middle sort of lapsed area. They weren't as bad as I thought they were going to be.
No, That's right. And look, the couple of glaring things that sort of stood out in this game too. Second phase play by Newcastle was really good.
Yeah.
Kept Canterbury on the back foot a lot. And the lopsided penalty count. Like, I don't care about the inside the 10, six to go, things like that. Now they're not classed as penalties anymore. They're just classed as, you know, as infringements, and, you know, the bell rings and we all play on. But the stop, stand still penalty count was 5 to Newcastle and 0 to, five against Canterbury and 0 against Newcastle. You simply cannot tell me that you're that terrifically disciplined. And yes, there was 3 set restarts in that against Newcastle. I understand that. But those now are totally taken out of the penalty count.
Well, that's right.
They're not stop-start. They're not stopping the game for a penalty. Those 3 set restarts, they're flow-on penalties now. Yeah. So they're not classed as that.
That's what I was about to say to everyone, is that 5-0 doesn't seem like a lot if you go back to a few years ago. But that is huge, because there is hardly any whistles being blown. I mean, look at the next game, and we won't talk about that, but that was 3-1 in penalties. So it's just not going to get blown that much. I thought the same thing. I thought it was commendable of Newcastle not to. Yes, they had some 6 again restarts, but just commendable. Their discipline was commendable enough just to not get any penalties. So
that's right. That's what I mean. Yeah, they gave away three of the set restarts there, but discipline wise. Very good by Newcastle, but that's, I mean, if it had been just, before these 6 again, and to have such a, even so, like a lopsided penalty count like that, is just keeping you on the back foot, and it's just taking opportunities away from you to sort of get back in the game, which Canterbury sort of, like you said, it was too little too late by the time they'd sort of, Newcastle might have just taken the foot off the pedal a little bit there. Towards the end, so that just sort of led to a late try there by the Bulldogs. But all in all, look, I think a pretty good performance by Newcastle.
Yeah.
Still plenty of things to work on, like with the first 3 to 4 weeks, especially with 0 preseason. Most teams only had the 1 hit out this year to start off the preseason. To get some reps together. I think the sort of the first 3 or 4 weeks of this season, we're going to see some sloppy games.
Yeah, of course we are. Yeah, 100%. But that's what I mean. I thought overall, but even in this game, if we're just concentrating on this one, I thought both teams played okay. There were lapses, but they weren't too bad. I am very – I'm not a Bulldogs fan by any stretch, but I'm very optimistic. I think that, that – Trent Barrett's picked the right players, at least for now, of what he could get at the time as well. So, I mean, Flanagan already, just Flanagan has, I think he's just completely owned that team and sort of molded to the way he wants to direct everyone around. And that's good. They never had that last.
No, that's right.
They never had that
last. And it'll come down to, the sort of halves play that he has. Obviously they've given Jake Avarello the first, chop at that the number 6 jersey. I like Corey Allen at fullback.
I love Corey Allen.
Nick Kotrick, one of their big signings over the years has gone into center, so he should see a little bit more ball. There's just a little bit of lack of quality up front. Aiden Tolman for them is a gigantic loss.
Yeah, they're like a couple of forward shorts still. 100%. They're a couple of
absolutely. Shorts. When Dylan Napa, former Origin player, can only get 15, 16 minutes off the bench.
Yeah.
I think that has to change. I think he needs to come into the starting side to give them some momentum to start to get the game moving forward, and for them, especially their halves, to get some confidence and a little bit of space for them to sort of get some good kicks off. And they can play a little bit better sort of field position.
Next game was the last Friday game. It was the Broncos going down to the Eels 24-16. The same as – I know I sort of took this to, I guess, at the end of the game, the same as Bulldogs. I thought, it's probably the whole new coach thing. So it's still a makeshift team really. But they were – they were pretty commendable, I thought. They were. I mean, they went down their second half. They lost it. Clearly, they lost it because they had such a hot start. But I thought they were pretty commendable during the whole game.
Look. I mean, look good in the first half. Yeah, they had a high completion rate in both halves.
Yeah.
Maybe lost a little bit of field, the field position game in that second half once Parramatta started to come back and started gaining all the momentum. Parramatta just had a mountain of possession in that second half as well. I thought it was a decent sort of free-flowing game. There was plenty of second phase. Well and good. Plenty of mistakes in this game. Woof.
Oh, it was great, yeah. 28 in total, 15 to Eels and 13 to Broncos. Yeah, that was sort of glaringly obvious in the stats. But that's okay, to an aspect, it's okay for the fact of that they're trying new things. That's how I sort of looked at a few of their second phase plays. And like you said, with the errors, they were trying new things. I mean, there was blatant errors that, just simple... simple one-off plays and all that.
It's the same sort of thing. It's just those first week jitters. A few guys. And look, there's a few guys that are absolutely, sort of playing for their future. At the Brisbane Broncos, and none more than Anthony Milford.
Oh, 100%. Tons
of pressure on Anthony Milford.
Has to be for the whole year. I thought. They end up going with Brodie Croft as their starting seven. I thought it was okay in general. I thought his kicking game was brilliant. I think that's what really sort of I took out of how well he played. He did. He was okay, but if I was comparing to last year where he didn't really get a look in, but when he did get a look in, he felt a lot more comfortable in this game.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's the thing too, you've got Kevvy Walters there, and he's a former half, and
wow, good
point. It might just be the juice that Brodie Croft sort of needs to get him going. It's a little disappointing for somebody like Tom Dearden, who I guess they'd sort of painted as a half of the future.
Wow.
But they brought in Brodie Croft specifically for this last year, and he simply didn't get the job done. So he's been given first dig again at the number seven.
Didn't they wax lyrical about Dearden being up at Townsville? Didn't they wax lyrical about it? I think that's all smoke and mirrors.
I don't know what to sort of think about that, whether or not they're actually serious. Who initiated this? This meeting with Dearden, was it the Cowboys? Was it Dearden's manager? I'm not sure.
It's his contract year. I guarantee his manager's stirring that up. Like you said, he's from where I am. He's a Mackay local boy. So there's every chance he's probably up there seeing relatives, and then happen to sort of be around the Leagues Club. Who knows?
And that's a possibility.
Getting back to the game, how good your boy used to play for the Titans. I thought David Mead was phenomenal in that game.
Man, David Mead should have never went to the Super League. Come on, man. David Mead, when he was at the Gold Coast, he was a quality player.
Yeah.
And for the NRL to lose him to the Super League, for a few years now, and for him to, it's great to see him back.
Yeah.
In the premier rugby league competition in the world, club rugby league competition in the world, and he just does what he does. He's a more than solid winger. Like he shows you flashes of brilliance, but he very rarely gives you a poor performance.
I thought he might have been a step slower, being that he's 33 this year, but it didn't look like. And then getting 191 meters, I thought he was fine.
No, hadn't lost a step at all.
The other side, in terms of most run meters, 200 run meters to Isaiah Papali. What, that guy just, every time the ball was just somewhere with Parramatta, that guy was everywhere. He was literally everywhere. Only because I've seen his hair and his beard. He was just everywhere, that guy. He was,
And that's what I mean. Yeah, he's a big recruit to come across from the Warriors, so... They played him plenty of minutes too, which is good. So they're sort of, they're running with some big boppers, on the field there. Junior Paulo played nearly 60 minutes Sean Lane, who is he was a mountain of a man, played over 60 minutes. Like it just the way that their big guns through the middle, you know, played well, and played big minutes. And also you know, Reed Marnie, who's going to be a shandy off. I think he's going to be a bit of a casualty of the class of Harry Grant in getting himself an Origin jersey for Queensland. Reed Marnie is a quality dummy half, and I like what he does. He's quick out of dummy. He takes advantage. He's going to be one of those guys that will take advantage of these six again rules, just purely because of his speed out of dummy half. Not quite as fast as Damien Cook, but very slick out of dummy half.
We didn't mention. I thought honestly Damien Cook had a lackluster, probably not a terrible, but a lackluster game in that Melbourne Storm. Rabbitohs.
He didn't get involved. He didn't get involved until it was too late.
He
wasn't engaging the line. He wasn't doing what has brought him success in the past, and that's being fast at a dummy half and engaging the line, engaging the markers. And once he starts to bring that sort of form back, then he's one of the most dangerous dummy halves getting around.
Another new signing there, and you know your boy, I guess, in the centres there. Tom Opacek.
Opacek, I was a bit disappointed that he got let go by the Cowboys, but you know, it just fits straight into the centres there at Parramatta, and is as solid a centre as you're going to get.
I think we said it in our preview sort of NRL. I think the only way that they're going to get to that next step is all dependent on Mitchell Moses. Has to be.
Yep. Obviously the keys. Him and Gutherson, you know, Gutherson is the heartbeat, but Moses is going to have to be the one to carry them to the promised land.
Sean Lane is 6'5". My God.
He's a monster.
Next game was the Warriors and Titans. Warriors, that was the one that I should have picked, getting over the Titans, because obviously Titans were perennial favourites, but they won Warriors 19-6. My God, that was a small crowd too.
Just out enthused.
Yeah.
Outperformed. Just those cliche fundamental things. Run hard, tackle hard. They did all the 1%ers right, I think the Gold Coast might have just been feeling themselves a little bit with the signings and everything like that, and you know, for them to even have the tiniest little sniff at the end of this game with the Corey Thompson try, you know, inside the last 10 minutes, you're never really out of it, but the Warriors held them at bay enough. Their goal line defense was spectacular.
Yeah.
Granted, the Gold Coast didn't throw a whole lot at them. I didn't see a lot of creativity there from Fogarty, who, funnily enough, has been named captain. So that's the kind of impact that he had last year for this Gold Coast side. You know, he's just come straight in this year. And he's straight up, he's the skipper.
Yeah. And I thought he led him well in this game. I thought he led him very well.
Yeah, no. But man, he's got a massive upper body on him too. Man, he must hit the gym hard. Like he has got some cannons on him. But I thought the first half was a little not so much a frenetic pace.
Yeah.
Like there were so many set restarts, you know, throughout that. There was 9 set restarts just in the first half, you know, 5 to the Gold Coast, 4 to the Warriors. And it just made for such a fast-paced game. And it just didn't look like New Zealand were really going to get into it. That there was from what I could sort of gather off the broadcast, Brandy Alexander was sort of coming out and saying that their kicks aren't high enough and not deep enough, so they're not giving, you know, their big guys, Mamalo and David Fusatua, any sort of chance to get up and compete for the ball. It was just a little bit sort of lackluster, I thought. But the effort that they made, the two tries that they scored first, you know, the Bailey Sirenham one, just a barge over, and the Leeson Armour try in the second half, just a barge over, and that just really looked the only way that any team was going to score. Creativity in the halves was a little bit lacking, I thought.
I still think they need a number nine. I'm not completely sold on Mitch Rain.
Mitch Rain is a solid dummy half out there, yeah, but I think I would have preferred to have kept Nathan Peets. That's just me personally, but I didn't think Mitch Rain did too bad. I thought he
wasn't too bad. I just don't think,
especially in the first half, like with those ruck infringements. I thought he did well in engaging the line of defense out of dummy half. I think lacking sort of, I guess, a little bit of flair, I suppose, out of dummy half. I guess that's what you want to call it. But that's a glaring hole in the Gold Coast side at the moment.
On the other side, the winners, the Warriors. God, Adam Fanua-Blake, hasn't he just slotted in and just showed, you know, just straight to work.
Doing Aiden Fanua-Blake things, just being a monster up front, and you're going to get that from him. You're going to get that from him week in, week out.
I could see him, you know, slowly. I'm assuming Tuivasa Sheck's their captain. I could see him, you know, considering what's going to happen next year with him. Fanua-Blake could be the captain. He felt very leader-like in that game. He's just, you know, just basically give me the ball and I'll show you what to do. All to the forwards, I suppose.
That's right. He reminds me a little bit of a firebrand, you know, in, you know, Jared Weir Hargraves. You know, he's just a firebrand up front.
Yeah.
You'll get no nonsense football out of him. He does give away a penalty or four and is sort of prone to maybe visiting the judiciary. Probably not so much as what Jared Weir Hargraves does. He seems to be a regular customer at the NRL judiciary, but he just sort of reminds me of that type of player, you know, a bit of a firebrand up front, and you can sort of, you know, hitch your wagon to him, you know, you're always going to get 110% out of him all the time.
And I mean, they've already started it well in terms of, before we move on to the next one, Melbourne, I kept reading that they were going hard back after Tohu Harris, because they want another fringe sort of player or that lock sort of player. And he re-signed with the Warriors. That's good. You know, they need people to re-sign to stay, you know, to stay and play in New Zealand. Yes, granted, he is a New Zealand, you know, born player, but that's not the point. You know, he still could have, by looks of it, commanded more money. So,
I mean, I guess he's happy over there. So, you know, he's won his premierships with Melbourne. You know, he's done. You know, he's represented his country, I guess, whether or not if he doesn't feel the need that he's got a whole lot to prove. So why not just be happy and be, you know, I guess, sort of home in New Zealand and play your last few remaining years out and playing at home.
Next game, the Roosters, the first that Saturday sort of game, sorry. God damn. I mean, 46-4 over the hapless Eagles. Seagulls, sorry, Manly Seagulls.
I mean, Tedesco's first touch was just a Ruben Garrick, an apprehensive Ruben Garrick, trying to go for the football, and he doesn't jump or anything, and Tedesco just jumps up, plucks it out of the air, and goes in for the first of his three tries. And you're just like, wow, that's Tedesco's first touch of the season. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Oh no. What's gonna is he had to prove a point or something this year? Because that's what I went. Holy hell! Like, you know,
What points he got to prove? Like, honestly,
he's got nothing to prove. Like,
no.
Completely understand. Completely get what you're saying. How about just the conversion? How about the big front rower taking the conversions for it?
Takiaho's a good kicker.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, like, you know, he missed a few. Don't get me wrong. He probably could have went a lot better.
And also when he was off as well, you know, Tedesco decided to take a kick and just absolutely slice the hell out of it and sort of go about 15 metres to the right of the uprights. So I think his kicking days might be over.
I thought, I mean, obviously Flanagan was their main kicker. I thought, I thought Keary might, you know, Keary started field goals, so there's no, you wouldn't think it would be hard to adjust to.
I guess that's the only problem there with a prop goal kicker is that he's not always going to be on the field. So
you've always got
to have a backup plan. But he is a more than capable goal kicker, Taukeiaho.
What do you think of Dylan Walker being named and put at fullback?
I mean,
I know they have no choice.
Best of the options they had available.
Okay. Yeah.
Look, they have played Ruben Garrick at fullback, and I don't think he looks very, very comfortable there. You know, Trbojevic will be back in 4 to 5 weeks, so
yeah.
they've got to make do. And he made a meal out of a couple of high bombs.
Yeah,
from Keary.
His tackle efficiency, that's right, and he's just
been thrown in there, you know, as a makeshift guy, and I understand that they in that position you want him to be touching the ball as much as possible, but he was sort of found wanting a couple of times sort of positionally, and him having to sort of use a little bit of speed to get into the right position to take the ball. Yeah, you know, a bit of a windy day there in Sydney. I think there's a lot of sort of swirling balls around, and those stand. Yeah, you know, obviously the ladies and the members stand there at the SCG aren't very tall compared to the rest of the stadium. So you know, there might have been a little bit of a prevailing breeze over the ladies and the members stand there, but. Just coming from out Manly way.
Just a big breeze coming from Manly way.
It's coming from the beach.
On the beach or the suburbs out there. It was just clinical Roosters. I mean, you know, the Morris boys were bred in particular and getting 3 tries as well. I mean,
he went 297 metres.
Like, you know, they signed
He went past ET on the top try scorers list.
He had the most line breaks and most run metres. He got 3 tries. I know they signed 1 year deals, but God, I don't know. I'm not going to say like the oil of Olay Tom Brady, but I don't know.
Look, man, they're evergreen at the moment.
They're very evergreen.
Like even Josh Morris scored his 150th try, you know, of his career. Like they're just prolific try scorers. They don't let you down very often.
No, they don't, and I guess the thing with the A's is they got them for cheap too, so they won't play, but they're Origin, you know, they're Origin caliber players.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think they've lost it that much to be Origin caliber players.
No, and playing in a side like the Roosters as well, you know, that obviously helps. You know, if they're maybe playing in a mid-table type team, you know, it might be a little bit more difficult, but you know, playing in a classy side like the Roosters have got. Obviously, you know, helps them greatly.
On the flip side, the next game, I mean, you know, speaking of getting let down, the Panthers are beating the Cowboys 24 to blot.
I wasn't extremely hopeful in this game. Look, the Cowboys' defense in the first half was unbelievable, and 90% of that was their own fault because they just could. Not they look so disjointed in attack. I don't know if they're the combinations that they were working on throughout the preseason. And if they were, what the hell did they just do throughout the preseason? Because they looked like they hadn't played together before. Morgan and Clifford, they looked like they hadn't played together before. It was unbelievable. The thing that sort of not so much sort of stood out to me really sort of shirted me off a little bit were as if the Cowboys weren't going to be under the pump and behind the eight ball from the get-go. But the two bullshit challenges that Penrith got, the first one was the James Fisher-Harris incorrect play the ball. He doesn't give Reece Robson a chance to get out of the play the ball. He plants the ball in his foot. He knocks it on. They challenge it. They get it back because they say that he's interfering in the play the ball. No, you have played the ball too quickly, and you planted it down on somebody's foot.
Yeah.
So that was incorrect. I don't give a shit what anybody says. That was incorrect. The next one was the Appy Coruscant knock on. He knocks it on a dummy half. He does not regain control of the football
That's
before
right. yep.
the point of the ball touches the ground.
Yeah.
but yet they give him that one. It's like, come on, man. Like, yeah. this is as clear and as plain as the nose on your face that that is a knock-on. Coruscant knew it was a knock-on.
Yeah, he gave the authority
to make that challenge to say that it wasn't a knock-on. That's, I don't understand and then they gave it to him.
Clearly it worked. Yeah, no, he looked like he gave up and went, yeah, okay, that's a knock-on. But someone, well, I don't know.
Of course it was a knock-on.
Someone must have just decided. For the Cowboys, like the 42 missed tackles, that was the killer for me. I mean, come on,
the amount of possession that they didn't, have.
That's right.
Throughout this game, like it was just, it sort of not so much evened up towards the end, but the first half possession, and it was all their own fault. They had Penrith had 65% of possession in that first half. The Cowboys in each half, just it was a clear ploy that they're going to try and play flat football.
Wow! They look at the run meters.
Six forward passes.
Look at the run meters. I mean, I'm not harping at all like what Tom Payton did. That's not Tom Alalo's fault. That's across the board everybody's fault. Yes, he got 73 meters, and that's nowhere near what he's used to. But it's exactly what you just said. Then it was. They played flat ball football, and that, I don't know if that works with your guys.
When you're so out of sync and you're so disjointed, that's never going to go well. Like Morgan wasn't getting involved until the last 20 minutes. Like it was just don't know what the hell happened to the game plan that they would have put in place at the start of the week.
Flat football, you know, with the amount of big quality forwards you have, flat football doesn't work. Like Jordan McLean should not be playing flat football, and that's why he got sort of turfed quickly. Josh McGuire sort of can because he's sort of built like that, but Tom Alalo definitely can't. He cannot play flat football. I that's exactly what I thought. Francis Milo's another one. You know, it just didn't work. I don't know.
Todd Payton has come out and said he wants more quality rather than quantity. That's why he only played him 51 minutes in this game. You can say quality over quantity all you like, but he has to play more than 51 minutes. I don't care what anybody says. 51 minutes is not enough. If you want to drop him down from say 73 or 70 minutes down to 65. 60 at a minimum,
yeah.
He has to be on that field because he is your engine. He is your go forward. He is going to be the one that is going to bring you out of those tough situations. And for him to be on there for 51 minutes, for him to have only 51 minutes and that dud Cohen Hess on there for the whole 80 minutes is beyond me, absolutely beyond me.
Well, breaking it down for Tom Mulally, and he had 9 touches, but in 9 touches, he got 73 metres. No one else came sort of, like if you wanted to break it down per touch, no one sort of came close to that. Yeah, Cohen has 5 run-ups, 39 metres. Like that's
pathetic for 80 minutes.
Even Miss Dunn wasn't that great as well. Not as bad as I thought as Cohen Hess, but... I completely agree.
It's glaringly obvious that he's just not up. He just can't play. Yeah, that's what I mean. You want to talk about quality over quantity? Like you have to sit him down. Like you've got to make your interchanges better. The Dylan Edwards try that was only 12 minutes into the second half. He was lazy as hell coming off. Yeah. He jumped the gun coming off the line, and as soon as the play stopped with Coruscant, he sort of stood still, and he just stood still inside the line of attack with Penrith. Then all of a sudden they have one pass to the left, goes to Dylan Edwards, and Cohen Hess, instead of backpedaling to get back on his line to defend his line, just stood there in Penrith's line of attack.
Yeah.
And Dylan Edwards ran straight through the hole that he was supposed to be manning. It's just like, what are you doing? Like, what is that?
You know what? It's going to be so funny because I never thought he was. It's going to be so funny that he can retire on his resume that he was a Maroons player, which to me is kind of absolutely ridiculous. He went on that little bit of form and he should have really never been there. That's my honest opinion.
He should
have
played Origin that very first year that he came into first grade and he didn't make it. He was playing ordinary football in 2018. made the Origin side. So how are they just basing that off last year? Like, and he's been ordinary since he's been a starting second rower. He is an impact player. You play him 35 to 40 minutes. That's it.
Yeah. Maguire should be on there more than him.
Tell him
Maguire
to go and put a bit of bulk on.
Yeah. Now Maguire should be on there.
Impact player.
He
was so frustrating.
On the Penrith side, it looks like they were pretty clean, pretty great from 1-17. It looks like, and I don't know if this was a ploy or just sort of happened because it was easily in this game, but Nathan Cleary looks like he's going to take on the line a lot more, and he did it. You know, 17 touches for 140 meters. So yes, they all got a lot of meters. Don't get me wrong, but for a halfback, I thought that stood out. I thought that was great.
Just amount of possession. I think they sort of knew that they could take on the Cowboys. With a running game like that. No real qualms with what happened there. They just totally come out physical. Like they knew, especially in the second half, they knew that North Queensland were gassed.
Yeah.
And they just out-muscled North Queensland.
Just
the physicality in some of the tackles and the lack of effort that was put in on some of the hit-ups by North Queensland. And that was a major disparity in the run meters that was there. They just could not bend the line of defense. So as soon as they would hit the line of defense, bang, they would go down, and they would go down hard.
Yeah. Well, Fisher Harris he's a man of a. I mean, yeah, they'll be. Granted, it's against the Cowboys, and they kept them to zero, but they didn't look like they skipped a beat. Yes, and again, yes, they lost the grand final, but you know, the way they played, I could see this team, you know, finishing at the top again, at least in the regular season.
No, it's right. Look, you know, I guess the only big sort of loss for them really is Jimmy Tamo. And you know, they've got guys like Moses Leota and James Fisher Harris and Kikau I think they could use him a little bit more as well. That's the kind of person and that's the kind of player that Cohen Hess needs to aspire to be.
Yeah.
Impact player. Go out there and play 45, maybe 50 minutes like that. Just go out there and give it your all. Go out there and try and make 12, 14 hit-ups and just go hard instead of having to try and pace yourself, which you clearly can't do.
Boy, that's why he got second row of the last year, because this is Kikau. Because he put, he might have played 45, 50 minutes at the most, but he put every 100% effort in.
That's
quality.
That's quality over quantity.
Yeah, 100%. Last two games, the Raiders beating the Tigers. I don't think anyone's sort of seen that was... I mean, to me, that was always going to happen. But the score wasn't sort of too bad for the Tigers, at least 30-12.
Hey, at least they got on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't sort of too much to take out of this game. I felt like it was sort of, glaringly obvious. The Tigers still look a bit of a mishmash. They weren't overly as bad as I thought they were going to be. Especially sorry after seeing your guys. I just, you know, seeing this game straight after, went, okay, you know, the Tigers aren't as bad as I thought they were going to be, sorry. I know I'm harping on your guys, but yeah.
I'd be laughing at them.
I don't know. I still think they're missing. I don't know what to make of Luke Brooks. I don't know. I'm glad Moses and Boy was playing 5-8. I thought that was okay. That wasn't too bad because Little was their hooker. I don't know. I don't know if he's a true out and out like halfback. I don't know.
Not so much. He's got the skills. He just has not lived up to.
It's probably
He just hasn't lived up to the hype that was thrown his way at such a young age.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's definitely fair. I was going to say, I didn't mind Moses and Boy in the 5-8. I thought that wasn't sort of too bad.
He's
a bit more creativity. Yeah, he's Mr. Can play every position, which is great. On the flip side, Hodges' sort of first game back, he didn't do a great deal, but he sort of did enough. I guess steering him forward, he sort of did enough. He didn't do great in terms of offense himself, but he probably didn't really need to.
No, well, he doesn't. That's, I mean, he doesn't. He didn't really have to in that game. Like, you know, I think the Raiders sort of had that game fairly well in hand, even though it was only six all at halftime. You know, I guess sort of offensively, they lit up a little bit more in the second half. It's the same sort of deal. Like, you know, they realistically should be there or thereabouts. Yeah. I think they sort of lack a little bit of quality in the centres at this point in time. You know, obviously, we know Jared Croker there for a few weeks. You know, the young kid there, Sebastian Chris, sort of come in and I don't know. They've got Curtis Scott there as well, but I think that's a little bit of a problem. You know, with some quality outside backs. You know, there's nothing wrong with Bailey Simonson, but you know, he's not gonna blow your skirt up every week. You know, he'll have good games here and there. You know, their jewel in the crown in the back line. You know, is Nicol Klokstad.
And they'll get
the job done up front as they generally do.
Well, and they had the young Hudson Young, who played a pretty good game. I think he topped the fantasy points, but I think because he was able to break the line, he got, he's only a 22-year-old from Maitland, actually. Oh, my God, he's from Maitland. Of course he is. you know, because there was some pretty solid, you know, he didn't have to get a starting position. You know, there's some pretty solid boppers on the bench, and Ryan Sutton, Sully Ola, and Ryan James, who could have started in that second row. So,
that's right.
Obviously, Ricky sort of seen something in him, and it showed. I think he was pretty good. He's 22, yeah. So he might end up keeping out that what's happening. And I don't know if I missed it with that Corey Huira Nara.
Oh no, Huira Nara and I can't remember who else. On there. Didn't they get pinged in the off season for drink driving or something like that?
Right.
And they've been dumped for a couple of games. I can't remember what it was. It might have been drink driving. They had a brush with the law, shall we say.
So that's another thing that Corey's done.
Harawira Naira has been turfed for a couple of weeks. So
I think it might even be turfed for a bit longer, but anyway, we'll see.
Well, and listen, look at the Raiders bench. Like that's pretty solid.
It's a pretty solid
second row as well. Yeah. You know, Elliot Whitehead's still there. Joseph Tarpany is once again he's one of those impact players. Like it's just.
And who's
they've got class all the way around there.
Who's the one? Are they still waiting for a UK player to come across? We mentioned it sort of, you know, in the preview. I thought I can't remember his name, but I don't think he played in this game. It's probably COVID reasons, or at least he probably wasn't. Well,
Harry Rushton, who they brought across from Wigan. So
I think he's in back row, isn't
he? Not 100% sure what's happening there. Whether or not he's still, whether he's come in with the team already, possibly something that we could maybe research for next week. Another English recruit. I'm not 100% sure if he's actually with the team at the moment.
Another second row. He's only 19 years old, which is
that's right. Yeah, he's lit up the Super League over the last couple of years, so and that's why they've grabbed him.
It looks like he's still in that sort of COVID protocol sort of area. So he's only 19.
Well, and I guess that's fair enough too, because sort of the UK at the moment is just absolutely rife with it. You know, the Premier League over there is still having no fans. So I could only assume I haven't seen that the Super League has actually started up. As of it, usually the Super League is, by the time we've started here, the Super League has already had a couple of rounds already under their belt. So I haven't seen any Super League games being advertised on Foxtel. So they may not have even got their season underway just yet. So they could be waiting for COVID restrictions to lift a little bit, which I don't think is going to happen over there in the very near future, because it's going a little bit balmy over there.
The last game was the Dragons and the Sharks. Sharks getting over the Dragons 32-18. I mean, we sort of said it when we were trying to think of songs before we got on the pod. I don't think It was Mary's fault. I think this just team is just a mismatch. This is the Dragons. I think the team is just such a mismatch. I don't know. I'm completely. I don't know. Ben Hunt played. They've got McCullough, so there's no way he's playing hooker. Ben Hunt, I guess, has to play halfback, but they have no go for it. I mean, I'm quietly glad Corey Norman didn't play, but that's, yeah, I don't think.
No, that's right. You know, they slotted Adam Clune in there, and that's oof, that must have been a big decision, you know, for Griffo to make. To leave Norman out of there in favor of sort of Adam Clune.
Yeah.
Like you said, creativity is going to be a little bit of a problem for them this year. Look, quality up front, they've got a lot of issues that not to say that they can't get through them this year, but boy, like that first half, you know, that the Dragons sort of put together.
Yeah.
You know, a massive brain fart, you know, inside the first, whatever it was, five minutes for Ben Hunt that led to the first try. The Tarek Sims, you know, piss weak attempt at sort of picking up the ball, which led to the Sharks' second try of the first half. Like, it was just mistake central.
Yeah.
And on a wet afternoon, but Cronulla went out there and they completed 90% of their sets.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
this
exactly
is the first
right.
half, and St. George were and that was still admirable, you know, at 76%, you know, completion rate in a wet game, but it just lacked a little bit of quality, you know, in that first half. But once again, it was a tale of, you know, like we said with Melbourne and South, the worst thing to happen for Cronulla was halftime.
Yeah,
they didn't come out of the sheds.
Yeah,
no, St. George
not
did.
Yeah, not till right. Yeah, exactly. Not till right at the sort of the end when they sort of got, you know, they got together. Yeah, the Dragons definitely come out and they were close to overtaking him, weren't they?
It was
they?
Okay.
Yeah.
So the momentum's all with the Dragons, right? It's 14-12.
12. Yeah.
The Sione Katoa, just there was a couple of bombs that he went up. He just didn't want a bar of him. Did not want a bar of him. Him and Will Kennedy. There was a couple of times where the same sort of thing. It looked like they hadn't played a game together, and they looked at each other, and then all of a sudden they look back, and the ball is all of a sudden on them, and the football bounces in funny ways. So the Dragons were denied a try that would have put them up 16, possibly 18-14.
Yeah.
It was taken away by the bunker. It was deemed that Jack Bird had knocked it on in the lead up to the try, so they took that off him. In the 10 minutes after that, the Sharks scored two tries and shut them out of the game. So they had the momentum. It was not so much not stolen off them, but, you know, it's just unfortunate. And, you know, that mistake happened. The try was taken off them. It's a 12-point swing. You know, they get 6 points taken off them, and Cronulla go down the other end within 3 or 4 minutes. And score straight away. So it's a punch in the guts. And you have those games sometimes, especially if luck's sort of not going your way. And that was a huge momentum killer that was taken away from the Dragons, who were starting to look really good inside that second half.
I felt he was Matt Moylan was commendable enough is probably the best way to put it in the 5-8. He's clearly not there. You know, Sean Johnson comes back, it's all over.
I have no idea what they do with him once Johnson comes back. I don't know what they do. What do they do?
I don't know.
Will Kennedy's playing well at fullback.
The only thing I can think is he goes into an interchange slot and just sort of play him sort of sparingly where you need to. I don't know what they're going to do with him. He's just, God, he was like that New South Wales perennial origin 5-8 slash fullback. And it's just straight off the face of the earth. So, it was okay in that game. Chad Townsend clearly took control of that game. And I thought And he's playing for his contract here, like they always do. Every player that when you play for your contract, you always seem
mostly
to play.
Do.
Josh Dugan wasn't too bad in that game. He might keep it up, but if he keeps it up, that's good. But yeah, they all do it every year. Every player does that. You know, I notice it so much in the NBA. Don't you just? The NBA is a perennial.
That's the ultimate sport where it's a contract year and you're putting up career numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Hassan Whiteside is a perfect example for that. Perfect example. Oh my god. So that was all the games.
Extorts people for 5 years, and then you're like, "Oh right, I know this is done."
That's honestly the team's fault. But anyway, that's all the games. We've just got some injury news. Sorry, before we move on to our studs and duds for the week.
Look, just a couple of, I guess, just a sort of couple of quick points before we get into studs and duds. Like, Ewan Aiken, who's one of the new signings for the Warriors, is about to have left ankle surgery. Had a really bad sprain, so he could be gone for up to 3 months.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a blow to the Warriors. And in that same game too, the Titans center Brian Kelly looks like he'll be gone for 3 to 4 weeks as well. He's got a fractured hand. The big one that I sort of wanted to point out was the nasty head clash that Jake Friend had during the Roosters and Seagulls game, and he was clearly in Disneyland after that, and some serious questions now again have to be asked on, I think, his playing future. They've already got Broid Cordner in, you know, a so-called half season concussion protocol.
Yeah,
and there's a very real chance that Jake Friend could be in the same boat, because that didn't look good. Like, he was stunned when he got up. It didn't look good. He just had that little bit of a faraway look in his eye, and he's had concussion issues in the past.
That's exactly
the past
right.
3 years. He has been a little bit injury prone. Shoulder. He's got like he had a broken arm there for he's got like a metal plate in his arm.
Yeah.
He's just been a little bit injury prone lately. I think his body might be breaking, because he's a tough little SOB. So
three concussions in the last 6 months. So
that's borderline. That's the same as Boyd Cordner.
Yeah. So that it's very
good.
That have to be major concerns that he's probably played his last game. 3 and 6 months. That's not good.
That's not good.
That's not good.
Especially getting rattled like that, and then that one that happened on Saturday afternoon. It just didn't look good. Didn't look good at all.
He's 31 years old. I don't care what people say about other. There's other injuries that are bad. Don't get me wrong, but to me, concussions are worse, because it's a lifelong thing. It can be potentially a lifelong thing.
And that's me. Different people react to head knocks in a different way. But that's it. It all. Look, it's a very, very real thing. Yeah, whether you're dealing with. With football players, whether you're dealing with, you know, rugby, AFL, or collision sports, yeah, the NFL, sports entertainment that we both love in professional wrestling. Yeah. Like, it's a very, and it's been rife throughout professional wrestling for a long time.
Yeah, and it's just, I'm just reading it now. He's just literally just become a dad for the first time, and he's getting married at the end of this season. So. There's plenty of other things to think about than just that.
No, absolutely. A lot of times they'd be trying to push the fact that, yes, it's a monetary thing, but you said, you've got to think of your long-term health.
Yeah.
I think they would have had to have had some real conversations with Boyd Cordner, and now I think they've got to sit down with Jake Friend and do the exact same thing.
And that, I think they have to. I mean, we all say what we say about the Roosters, and it's probably not the players, it's probably the team itself, in terms of, like, you know, who they get and how they can sign these players and blah, 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 blah. But their players, really, really do play for that jersey. As, you know, I whinge about them all the time because of cap issues and all that. But they, you know, your Jake Friends, your Boyd Corners, they really, really, really play for that jersey. And so does Jared Waria Hargreaves.
Absolutely.
They say, I agree. I mean,
when they bleed red, white, and blue like those guys have in the past and do, then, you know, they wear their heart on their sleeve, and that's, I mean, they give you everything, all of their might every single week, and that's, I mean, just to see that happen, you know, again, and you're like, oh man, like, you know, you'd hate to see, you know, a career end as abruptly as that, but you know, he's got plenty more life to live.
Unfortunately, Inglis is a perfect, you know, they ruled that as an injury retirement because he had to sort of abruptly, or not so much, but he was coming towards that anyway. You know, both these players are over 31 years old, Jake Friend and Boyd Cordner. So they could probably get some sort of injury, an injury retirement. What's that rule where they, you know, some of the caps?
Yeah,
it's
happened before. Anthony Watmo, I think.
Greg Inglis just
they sort of force them into retirement, but they don't forego a lot of their contract. Like they can still get paid, and then it does, but then it doesn't come under the salary cap. So, but they have to meet sort of certain criteria to get that, you know, sort of forced injury retirement. So
I don't know if there's still more to put in. I know we're harping on the concussions or sort of dragging on with the concussions. I don't know if there's more to put in with the concussion. I know they go straight off the field, and if they've been deemed that they don't pass the HIA, they automatically miss the next week. I don't know, like, I don't know if there's more that they can do, or I don't know. And just because these two are glaringly obvious, so yeah, I don't know. I don't like concussions. I mean, no one can tell me that they like seeing players, like, you know, running or walking. You know, and Boyd Cordner was one of the worst ones, just, you know, completely in La La Land. I hate seeing it. I hate seeing it. It's terrible.
Well, it's not a terrific thing, and we all want to see big hits and things like that. But when you see someone's cage rattled like that, you know, you got to feel for the player. Yeah. You know, I guess with a sport like the NFL, you know, they're doing their best, and they've all got to wear helmets and things like that. I'm just really honestly surprised that, you know, headgear is not worn by a lot more rugby league players than what is at the moment.
I kind of think, at least in the you know, you build it young, so I think every up to under 15, 16 should be and mandatory wear a head guard. Why not? Because your kids are as young as 8. They're not going to probably do it as impact. They all watch the game. They all see the big hits.
No, that's right.
They
exactly.
all love the big hits.
And you would have thought, you know, the champion of the headgear, Jonathan Thurston, would have got a lot of, you know, kids out there wearing the headgear.
He did.
But it just,
he did.
You know what
he
I mean?
Did.
It just.
But I
no,
just
like, no,
plan.
Of course.
I think,
but they've got to continue to do
he
it.
He would be. Wouldn't he be a phenomenal ambassador just to get there? I think it should be mandatory. I don't know about NRL, but I think in all junior clubs it should be mandatory. There's nothing wrong. I've worn it. There's nothing wrong with wearing it.
I don't see anything wrong with that at all.
It doesn't affect your game at all. I've never had in a game where it's affected me and slowed me down or anything, because it's just protecting my head.
Yeah,
other bit of news was, speaking of the Roosters, is possible Joseph Suaalii, being that he's only 17 years old and technically should be wearing a headgear as well, just to throw that in the mix. And I think he does, actually. I actually think he does.
Yeah, no,
has
pretty
now,
sure he does.
The NRL have granted the Roosters an exemption, and it's very possible he'll play this week coming. Or he's now in their 30-man squad.
He's eligible to play first grade.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, he's 17.
Why have the rule in place if he's going to flaunt it? And then, you know, then you know, the CEO Abdo's sort of come out and said, oh, you know, this isn't going to be the norm or anything or that. So why make the rule in the first place? Like, I don't understand. The rule's in there for a reason. Now, whether or not I can't remember if we mentioned this sort of stuff on the preseason pod. What if this is the Gold Coast? What if this is the West Tigers? You know, not your so-called super glamour clubs. Is he going to be eligible to play, or they're going to go, nah? But because it's the Roosters,
well,
because it's the Golden Boys, I thought they granted this exception. It's just like, he's come. Abdo's come in and said this is very rare and this isn't going to be the norm. Then why have the freaking rule in place in the first up? Why?
I took it as not so much the Roosters. I just think that, because he had that sniff of rugby, I think they're just doing everything to keep this guy.
Absolutely.
That's all I sort of took out of that is that, well, you're not giving whatever he wants, but.
Give him anything he wants because we don't want to lose this kid to rugby union. Simple.
And I watched him in the preseason game. Yeah, he didn't do a lot, but enough to go, okay, you know, for 17 years old, I could see what they're saying about this kid. So, I agree. What's the point of having the rule in the first place? But no,
that's right. The last 17 year old to make his first grade debut was Jason Samalalo.
I'll put this in aspect. This is Tamalalo. Yeah, forget the first round game, but isn't that really his 10 years for 10 million? That could be considered a bargain.
That's a bargain.
That was such a shrewd move.
Whether or not there's something in the contract that could say that could be restructured, you know, that could be a back-ended contract, you know what I mean? Like anything can happen. Contracts can be torn up at any time. So, you know, contracts, I think, obviously, could be renegotiated any time as well.
That don't mean anything in the NRL, but anyway, that's a whole
thing. Well, they don't mean anything in any sport these days, please.
Last thing we'll talk about is our studs and duds of the week. Always like starting on the stud because, you know...
Well,
I love it. It's a stud. Yeah. Who'd you have for your stud?
Look, you know, we could have gone the glaringly obvious and had the Tedesco hat trick or the Brett Morris hat trick or the Pappenhausen masterclass. Sorry. Sorry. It's a man who is wearing green on Sunday, 693 days between first grade games, two devastating knee reconstructions and Ryan James scoring on debut for Canberra in the second half was Matt. And that's, you know, that might be, you know, might be pulling at my heartstrings a little bit because he played so long for the Gold Coast. And I don't think he sort of really lived up to his full potential. Like there was a lot of raps put on him, you know, as a young kid coming through grade there. And he was given the captaincy and everything like that. He was given every opportunity to succeed. You know, I don't think he sort of lived up to that, but you know, the look on his face that you sort of see the video after the first knee injury that he had, and then a year, not even a year later, in a training run in preseason, and him blowing it out again, it's devastating, and for him to come back, you know, and where playing for the Green Machine. And he was just super, you could see he was super emotional. He was emotional before the game. And for him to score just a major barge over try, unbelievable. So good.
Yeah, I think, I agree. I think, I'm not picking him, but I agree exactly what you're saying. He still hasn't reached that, well, because of the injuries, he didn't reach that sort of true potential that everybody thought he had. But I think he was very, very solid off that bench.
No, he was.
You know, scoring a try was that cherry on top. Don't get me wrong, but
he played over 40 minutes. Like, you know, to come back from that sort of injury and to play more than half a game of footy and to be, he would have been extremely nervous, you know, playing on that, running on that, stepping off that, off that knee. So, you know, he could, you know, if like a lot of prop forwards, just take footwork, you know, out of the equation, a la somebody like Matt Scott or Martin Lang. You know, don't worry about footwork. Just run, you know, hard and fast, straight up and down the middle. So, you know, don't worry about footwork. But, you know, those kind of props are very few and far between these days. But, yeah, I just thought that was sort of an amazing story that sort of unfolded on Sunday.
I nodded my head, I should say, to Robin Pappenhausen because I'm going to say it now and I'm taking it and I'm waiting for the – I've been literally waiting for the odds to come up. I feel really, really – I know he's young and everything, but I really feel like he can be – if they keep what I just seen, I think he could be Dally M Player of the Year and I'm going to call it. It's so like it's Billy Slater. It's I don't it really say it's all good. That's it's, so easy to say, but it 2. is. 2.0. It really is. He did this in the grand final. He did this in the semis. And it's like he's picked up another step. Like that second try he did, granted it was 29 minutes, but that second try where they sort of, it was a terrible ball here to sort of pick it up at the back here. And he's ran. He's done that side run to the corner. He's passed four people with the speed. And then I didn't like Latrell Mitchell's sort of throw. He was pissed. He sort of threw him off at the, I don't know if you've seen that.
He was too, pissed.
He wasn't in position. But he's the, you know, and it's probably literally half a meter that, and no one closed it. He got through that half a meter gap of four people running sideways.
He doesn't need much of an invitation to slip through a gap.
I'm telling you now. I know he won't be favored, so I'm putting money on him as Dally M. I'm calling it real.
We're gonna hear Ryan Pappenhausen bias. Oh yeah, sweet.
Yes, we will hear.
Just like my Julius Randle bias for the New York Knicks and him getting most improved player in our NBA pods.
That's very possible. Trust me.
Don't worry, it's possible.
Start of the week. And it's not so much the Cowboys, just for me, that I had. I don't like Todd
Payton. 17?
No, I didn't like Todd Payton's post press conference. It's not that he talked down. I don't know if he was motivating and all that. Like he said, I guess he gave that criticism to Jason.
He's very frank. He's very frank, and he pulls no punches. So
and he also said, you know, we were lucky it wasn't 50-0. Like I don't know.
They were lucky that it wasn't double that score.
All I'm saying is I don't know if I backed his call of we've talked about it. I don't know. I did a lot of press comments because it was too unfair to signal him in. I would have signaled out the 1-17 like you just said then. So I don't know. I just didn't like. I like Todd Payton. I think he'll do wonders there. I mean it's his first game. Don't get me wrong. And I think he's taken on the side. Who have they brought in? No one. I can remember. So he hasn't even been able to buy any players yet. So it's not his team, and that's fine. It could be a motivating thing too. I don't know. Like, you know, and that happens in games. But I just didn't really like the post.
It's accountability. That's all it is to me, and it's me. He's making everyone accountable.
It's probably just he probably, like you said, he just doesn't cop any flack and he just tells it as it is, and that's fine.
And that'll be on the players to show a bit of resilience and go, hey, look, I'm not as crap as what the coach has said that I am. So, you know, I'll put in a little bit more effort. Yeah. You know? And then if they've got enough depth in the team and once players start to get dropped. The thing that was a little bit funny to me also with that game, just before we sort of sign off, was the decision to play Granville and Reuben Cotter. So they essentially had three dummy halves in that side.
Yeah.
That's such a very strange sort of, makeup of the team.
I agree. I know you love him.
Cotter as a middle forward, that was very bizarre. I don't know how or why he thought that may have been the strategy to work, especially against sort of a physical side like Penrith. That might work against, you know, some of the smaller forward packs out there, but not against this pack.
I unfortunately thought the same thing, but I thought about it for your other boy, and I love him. I love Jake Granville, but Reece Robson's an 80-minute player. Jake Granville doesn't play a lot of other positions that really stand out to me. I think that with Reuben Cotter can sort of play other ones. I don't think Jake Granville fits in that squad anymore.
It's the disappointing thing is because of the limited interchanges, then if you want to play Granville, then you essentially have to burn two interchanges to get your dummy half, into the game properly. I'd like to see the strategy of, you know, your starting dummy half comes on for, say, the first 25 to 30 minutes. Then you have a guy that comes off the bench, runs the team, tries to take care of take advantage of tied forwards to try and dart in and out of dummy half, you know, for the last 10 minutes of the first half, maybe the first 10 minutes of the second half, and then bring, you know, your starting dummy half back on at the back end of the game when he's got plenty of fresh legs, and runs the team in from there. That's also the strategy I like to see what they use with Jason Tamalolo. So, that's just me as a preference. So that's just the kind of game plan that I feel is a working, a fairly tried and true. It's just unfortunate that, you do that, you've pretty much then burned four interchanges right there and then for two players.
I don't think he fits here. I mean, only because of how quickly Reece Robson's ascended in that team. That's the only reason. So, unfortunately. Because I like Jake Granville. I really do. I do like Jake Granville.
Oh, no, I love Jakey.
So, who did you have as your dud of the week? Or duds or something?
The dud of the week was a little bit sort of obscure, I think, but I don't know how much you've seen or took notice of the statues that were presented to Billy Slater and Kevin Smith. Much they did not look one iota like the people that they were meant to be portraying.
I thought Billy Slater's looked very closer compared to Kevin Smith.
Really? Slater won't look like him either.
But it's funny. You say that, right? And I agree.
They don't look anything like him.
I totally agree. But can you accept there's only one that I can think of. And I don't know if it's because of a hair thing or what. But there's only one that I can think of in the entire world that looks like the actual player. And that's Wally Lewis. I don't think that no one makes it.
So they should make the king look.
That's right.
That's the emperor of Lang Park right there.
That's right. And it looks like him. But I'm saying it must be hard to make a bronze statue. Like, look at Cristiano Ronaldo.
Don't make him. If you can't make him look like the person, don't freaking make him.
Look at Cristiano Ronaldo's one where it had like the weird little in the head. Like,
oh, that was great.
I'm trying to think.
Wasn't that for like an airport or something like that? That was terrific.
It was a Madrid airport. And he walks past it every time. It's terrible. But that's what I'm saying. It's so hard.
Man.
There was one in the US, and I was trying. I should have wrote it down. I was racking my brain, and I had it down. I remembered it. I should have wrote it down. There was one in the US. It must be very hard to make a bronze statue out of a portrait of a player. I don't know. I don't know. I agree. I mean, Wally Lewis looks like Wally Lewis. I don't know if it's because he's bald or what. But, holding up, just that's Wally Lewis.
That's right. Yes, of course. It's the king.
Probably he's got those nice features, he's got the mustache, the bald head. He's holding up the trophy. That's Wally Lewis, the State of Origin trophy. That was Wally Lewis. That is Wally Lewis. Every time you
go there. That is Wally Lewis.
But no.
king of representative football for the Kangaroos and for the Maroons.
And I agree. I mean, the statues weren't lifelike at all. And I don't care. On the other third one, I don't care what people say. Like, those two got it because they're one club players. Yes, I'm very hopeful and I'm very sure Cooper Cronk will get it. But
it's clear the club has some sour feelings there.
I don't know. They probably do it to an aspect, but I'm just saying, Billy Slater and Cameron Smith were one club players. So they deserve to get it first. Like, you didn't have to give it to all three of them. I thought that was fine.
Cronk still played over 300 games for the club?
I understand that. But what I'm just saying, he will get one. I'm just saying I had no problems with them just getting it first is all I'm saying. It's not like, when Wally Lewis played, like everybody else got one. Has Artie Beeston ever got one? That's really weird. He didn't get one, did he? He hasn't got one.
No, he might have. I think Artie might have one. Outside of Suncorp around there, so I think they're starting to rack up a few around Suncorp at the moment. I haven't been there for a few years, so don't worry, I will let you know, and I will let all the listeners here know exclusively from Lang Park, from Suncorp Stadium at Magic Round, because I will be there.
I haven't told you that it's a very, very chance that I might have a box that with Magic Round weekend 2-3 work, just to throw that in the mix.
Can you make a box for four people?
Because they put it out there. They said do your retailers on that? Which round do you want to go and watch for for the Brisbane and all, you know, Queensland Rugby and all those games. And I said, yeah, the magic round, I'll take that. Thank you.
what, is it a three-day pass or is it a one-day?
No, one day. I'll pay for the rest. But I'm saying you get the flights and then you get the Brisbane game. So that Brisbane day, if that makes sense. So I don't care. I'll pay for the rest. I could care less. Everything else is pretty much paid for.
If you could make the box for four people, that'd be really good.
Yeah, okay. I'll look into that. I'm sure I can look into that. I literally forgot about that. We'll talk about that off the pod and we'll finish it off. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod, excuse me, and Facebook is always Final Play Podcast, which we just go, you know, basically ham on everything in terms of any breaking news. It's pretty much up there in about 2 minutes. So any, you know, not saying every sport's breaking news, but anything that's very, like, you know, like Drew Brees retiring as an example, that kind of thing, you know, big news. So
sad day today, but I think, well, you know, I've been saying it for a little while that we all knew that was going to happen, but a sad day, but I guess, yeah, it's the celebration, I guess, of 15 years to the day that he signed with the Saints. Yeah. So, and like I put up on Facebook, you know, not only, you know, just a champion of the NFL, you know, a champion of the New Orleans Saints, but just a shining light to a city that was in, you know, in grim need of a hero after Katrina. And, you know, he just breathed life into the city and gave the city hope. You know, especially after such the scenes that you saw, you know, with the Superdome and, you know, them sort of being uprooted for a year. And, you know, for him to win a Super Bowl there, you know, is unbelievable for that city. You know, obviously didn't go out on a high horse like I'd sort of hoped. You know, sort of, limped his way towards the end of his career, but still, and you know, an amazing career and just a good dude.
Perfect. Everything you said there was perfect. And just put New Orleans on the map. I mean, that was pretty, you know,
they were perennial losers for their first 30 years of existence.
Because no one wanted to go there. And now I keep reading, like, he's talking to Zion all the time to stay there and to tell him how good the city is and all that. So, yeah.
If you're good to that city will be good to you.
It's exactly what he said. So, well, have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Yeah, Drew Brees is, magic. He's first ballot Hall of Famer. Smith.
Oh, well, yeah. And he goes straight into the NBC booth. Year, so you know he won't be hurting financially. So you know, I'm Miles. Can't wait to hear what Drew Brees sounds like on the Mike Plumb.
Oh yeah, yeah. You hear him on post conferences and that. I think he's pretty well spoken. So I think the Tony Romo one shocks me. Just
Romo's great.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's glaringly, shockingly. Sorry, I was. Pleasantly shocked of how great he is.
I love listening to Tony Romo.
And this is probably why Drew, you know, what they NBC are thinking of Drew Brees. He calls plays before they happen.
No, that's right. And he still does it now. He's always partnered with Jim Nantz, and he's always amazed at what Tony sees from up in the booth and the way the plays unfold. It's unbelievable.
Drew will see that. I guarantee Drew will see that.
Drew will see that.
Yeah. Have a good week, everyone.
See ya.